couldn't argue that. I saw the indecision on her face. She glanced at the time and sighed. Let me check something. I didn't know where she went, but she was 15 minutes late for the meeting. By then, Alberta had already debriefed the guardians on what we'd learned. Mercifully, she skipped the details about how we'd gotten our data, so we didn't have to waste time explaining the ghost part. The cave's layout was examined in detail. People asked questions. Then decision time came. I braced myself. Fighting Strigoi had always meant relying on a defense strategy. We attacked only when attacked. Previous arguments for an offensive had always failed. I expected the same now. Only it didn't come. One by one, the guardians stood up and expressed their commitment to going on the rescue mission. As they did, I saw that fire Dimitri had spoken of. Everyone was ready for a fight. They wanted it. The Strigoi had gone too far. In our world, there were only a handful of places that were safe. The royal court and our academies. Children were sent to places like St. Vladimir's with the certainty they would be protected. That certainty had been shattered, and we wouldn't stand for that, especially if we could still save lives. An eager, victorious feeling burned in my chest. Well, then, said Alberta, glancing around. I think she was as surprised as I was, though she, too, had been in favor of a rescue. We'll plan the logistics and head out. We've still got about 9 hours of daylight to go after them before they leave. Wait, said my mother, standing up. All eyes turned to her, but she didn't bat an eyelash under the scrutiny. She looked fierce and capable, and I was immensely proud of her. I think there's one thing we should consider. I think we should allow some of the senior novices to go. This started a small outcry, but it only came from a minority. My mother gave an argument similar to what I had given her. She also maintained that novices would not be in the front lines, but that we would serve more as backup should any Strigoi get through. The guardians had almost approved of this idea when she dropped another bomb on them. I think we should bring some Moroi with us. Celeste shot up. She had a huge gash on the side of her face. It made the bruise I'd seen on her the other day seem like a mosquito bite. What are you, insane? My mother fixed her with a calm look. No. We all know what Rose and Christian Ozara did. One of our biggest problems with Strigoi is getting past their strength and speed to go in for the kill. If we bring fire-using Moroi, we have a distraction that will give us an edge. We can cut them down. A debate broke out. It took every ounce of self-control I had not to join in. I remembered Dimitri's words about not interrupting. Yet as I listened, I couldn't help my frustration. Every minute that passed was another minute we weren't going after Eddie and the others. It was another minute in which someone might die. I turned to where Dimitri sat beside me. They're being idiots, I hissed. His eyes were on Alberta, as she debated a guardian who usually worked the elementary campus. No, murmured Dimitri. Watch. Change is happening before your eyes. People are going to remember this day as a turning point. And he was right. Once again, the guardian slowly signed on with the idea. I think it was part of that same initiative that made them want to fight in the first place. We had to get back at the Strigoi. This was more than our fight. It was the Moroi's, too. When my mother said she'd gotten a number of teachers to volunteer, they absolutely wouldn't allow students for this. The decision was made. The guardians were going after the Strigoi, and novices and Moroi would go with them. I felt triumphant and exultant. Dimitri was right. This was the moment our world would change, but not for 4 hours. More guardians are coming, Dimitri told me when I once again expressed my outrage. In 4 hours, the Strigoi could have decided to have a snack. We need an overwhelming show of force, he said. We need every edge we can get. Yes, the Strigoi could kill a couple more before we get there. I don't want that, believe me. But if we go in unprepared, we could lose more lives than that. My blood boiled. I knew he was right, and there was nothing I could do about it. I hated that. I hated being helpless. Come on, he said, gesturing toward the exit. Let's take a walk. Where? It doesn't matter. We just need to get you calmed down, or you'll be in no shape to fight. Yeah? Are you afraid of my possibly insane dark side coming out? No, I'm afraid of your normal Rose Hathaway side coming out, the one that isn't afraid to jump in without thinking when she believes something is right. I gave him a dry look. Is there a difference? Yes. The second one scares me. I resisted the urge to elbow him. For half a heartbeat, I wished I could close my eyes and forget about all the hurt and bloodshed around us. I wanted to lounge in bed with him, laughing and teasing, with neither of us worried about anything else except each other. That wasn't real, though. This was. Won't they need you here? I asked. No. Most of what they're doing now is waiting for the others, and they have more than enough people right now to help plan the attack. Your mother's leading that. I followed his gaze to where my mom stood, in the center of a group of guardians, pointing with sharp, forceful motions toward what looked like maps. I still never quite knew what to think about her, but watching her now, I couldn't help but admire her dedication. There was none of the dysfunctional annoyance I usually experienced around her. Okay, I said. Let's go. He took me on a loop around campus, and we surveyed some of the aftermath. Most of the damage wasn't to the campus itself, of course. It was to our people. Still, we could see some signs of the attack. Damage to buildings, bloodstains in unexpected places, etc. Most noticeable of all was the mood. Even in full daylight, there was a darkness around us, a heavy sorrow that you could almost reach out and feel. I saw it on the faces of everyone we passed. I half expected Dimitri to take me through where some of the injured were. He steered clear of that, however, and I could guess why. Lyssa was helping out there, using her powers in small doses to heal the wounded. Adrian was as well, though he couldn't do nearly as much as her. They'd finally decided that it was worth risking everyone knowing about Spirit. The tragedy here was too great. Besides, so much about Spirit had gotten out at the trial that it had probably only been a matter of time anyway. Dimitri didn't want me near Lyssa while she was using her magic, which I found interesting. He still didn't know if I was really catching her madness, but he apparently didn't want to take any chances. You told me you had a theory about why the wards broke, he said. We'd extended our circuit of campus, not far from where Jesse's society had met last night. I'd nearly forgotten. Once I'd pieced it together, the reason had been perfectly obvious. No one had really asked many questions about it, not yet. The immediate concerns had been to get new wards up and tend to our own people. The investigation would occur later. Jesse's group was doing their initiation right here by the wards. You know how stakes can negate wards because the elements go against each other? I think it's the same thing. Their initiation rites used all the elements, and I think they negated the wards in the same way. Magic is used all the time on campus, though, pointed out Dimitri. In all the elements. Why has this never happened before? Because the magic isn't usually happening right on top of the wards. The wards are on the edges, so the two don't usually conflict. Also, I think it makes a difference in how the elements are being used. Magic is life, which is why it destroys Strigoi and why they can't cross it. The magic in stakes is used as a weapon. So was the magic in the torture session. When it's used in that sort of a negative way, I think it cancels out good magic. I shivered, recalling that sickening feeling I'd felt when Lyssa had used spirit to torment Jesse. It hadn't been natural. Dimitri stared at a broken fence that marked one of the academy's boundaries. Incredible. I never would have thought that was possible, but it makes sense. The principle really is the same as for the stakes. He smiled at me. You've thought about this a lot. I don't know. It just sort of all fell together in my head. I glowered, thinking of Jesse's idiotic group. Bad enough they'd done what they did to Lyssa. That was enough to make me want to kick their asses, though not kill them anymore. I'd learned some restraint since last night. But this? Letting Strigoi into the school? How could something so stupid and petty on their part have led to this sort of disaster? It almost would have been better if they'd tried to make this happen, but no. It had come about through their glory-seeking game. Idiots, I muttered. The wind picked up. I shivered, and this time it was from the chilly temperature, not my own unease. Spring might be coming, but it certainly wasn't here yet. Let's get back inside, Dimitri said. We turned around, and as we walked toward the heart of the secondary campus, I saw it, the cabin. Neither of us slowed down or obviously looked at it, but I knew he was just as acutely aware of it as I was. He proved it when he spoke a moment later. Rose, about what happened. I groaned. I knew it. I knew this was going to happen. He glanced over at me, startled. That what was going to happen? This. The part where you give me the huge lecture about how what we did was wrong, and how we shouldn't have done it, and how it's never going to happen again. Until the words left my mouth, I didn't realize how much I'd feared he would say that. He still looked shocked. Why would you think that? Because that's how you are, I told him. I think I sounded a little hysterical. You always want to do the right thing, and when you do the wrong thing, you then have to fix it and do the right thing. And I know you're going to say that what we did shouldn't have happened, and that you wish... The rest of what I might have said was smothered as Dimitri wrapped his arm around my waist and pulled me to him in the shadow of a tree. Our lips met, and as we kissed, I forgot all about my worries and fears that he'd say what we'd done was a mistake. I even, as impossible as it seems, forgot about the death and destruction of the Strigoi, just for a moment. When we finally broke apart, he still kept me close to him. I don't think what we did was wrong, he said softly. I'm glad we did it. If we could go back in time, I'd do it again. A swirling feeling burned within my chest. Really? What made you change your mind? Because you're hard to resist, he said, clearly amused at my surprise. And? Do you remember what Rhonda said? There was another shock, hearing her brought up. But then I recalled his face when he'd listened to her and what he'd said about his grandmother. I tried to remember Rhonda's exact words. Something about how you're going to lose something. I apparently didn't remember it so well. You will lose what you value most, so treasure it while you can. Naturally, he knew it word for word. I'd scoffed at the words at the time, but now I tried to decipher them. At first, I felt a surge of joy. I was what he valued most. Then I gave him a startled look. Wait, you think I'm going to die? That's why you slept with me? No, no, of course not. I did what I did because, believe me, it wasn't because of that. Regardless of the specifics, or if it's even true, she was right about how easily things can change. We try to do what's right, or rather, what others say is right. But sometimes, when that goes against who we are, you have to choose. Even before the Strigoi attack, as I watched all the problems you were struggling with, I realized how much you meant to me. It changed everything. I was worried about you. So, so worried. You have no idea. And it became useless to try to act like I could ever put any Maroi life above yours. It's not going to happen. No matter how wrong others say it is. And so I decided that's something I have to deal with. Once I made that decision, there was nothing to hold us back. He hesitated, seeming to replay his words as he brushed my hair from my face. Well, to hold me back, I'm speaking for myself. I don't mean to act like I know exactly why you did it. I did it because I love you, I said, like it was the most obvious thing in the world, and really it was. He laughed. You can sum up in one sentence what it takes me a whole speech to get out. Because it's that simple. I love you, and I don't want to keep pretending like I don't. I don't either. His hand dropped from my face and found my hand. Fingers entwined, we began walking again. I don't want any more lies. Then what'll happen now? With us, I mean. Once all of this is done. With the Strigoi.
Well, as much as I hate to reinforce your fears, you are right about one thing. We can't be together again. For the rest of the school year, that is. We're going to have to keep our distance.
I felt a little disappointed by this, but I knew with certainty he was right. We might finally have reached the point where we weren't going to deny our relationship anymore, but we could hardly flaunt it while I was still his student. Our feet splashed through slush. A few scattered birds sang in the trees, undoubtedly surprised to see so much activity and daylight around here. Dimitri stared off into the sky ahead, face thoughtful.
After you graduate, and are out with Lyssa.
He didn't finish. It took me a moment, but I realized what he was about to say. My heart nearly stopped. You're going to ask to be reassigned, aren't you? You won't be her guardian.
It's the only way we can be together.
But we won't actually be together, I pointed out.
Us staying with her gives us the same problem, me worrying more about you than her. She needs two guardians perfectly dedicated to her. If I can get assigned somewhere at court, we'll be near each other all the time. And in a secure place like that, there's more flexibility with a guardian schedule.
A whiny, selfish part of me wanted to immediately jump in with how much that sucked, but really, it didn't. There was no option we had that was ideal. Each one came with hard choices. I knew it was hard for him to give up Lyssa. He cared about her and wanted to keep her safe with a passion that almost rivaled my own. But he cared about me more, and he had to make that sacrifice if he still wanted to honor his sense of duty. Well, I said, realizing something, we might actually see more of each other if we were guarding different people. We can get time off together. If we were both with Lyssa, we'd be swapping shifts and always be apart. The trees were thinning up ahead, which was a shame because I didn't want to let go of his hand. Still, a surge of hope and joy began to blossom in my chest. It felt wrong in the wake of such tragedy, but I couldn't help it. After all this time, after all the heartache, Dimitri and I were going to make this work. There was always the possibility he could get assigned away from the court. But even so, we'd still manage to get some time off together every once in a while. The time apart would be agony, but we would make it work, and it would be better than continuing to live a lie. Yes, it was really going to happen. All of Deirdre's worries about me coping with conflicting pieces of my life would be for nothing. I was going to have it all, Lyssa and Dimitri. The thought that I could be with both of them was going to make me strong. It would carry me through this Strigoi attack. I'd tuck it away in the back of my mind, like a good luck charm. Dimitri and I didn't say anything else for a while. Like always, we didn't have to. I knew he was feeling the same happy buzz I was, despite that stoic exterior. We were almost out of the forest, back in sight of the others, when he spoke again. You'll be 18 soon. But even so, he sighed. When this comes out, a lot of people aren't going to be happy. Yeah, well, they can deal. Rumors and gossip I could handle.
I also have a feeling your mother's going to have a very ugly conversation with me.
You're about to face down Strigoi, and my mother's the one you're scared of? I could see a smile playing at his lips.
She's a force to be reckoned with. Where do you think you got it from?
I laughed. It's a wonder you bother with me, then.
You're worth it, believe me.
He kissed me again, using the last of the forest's shadows for cover. In a normal world, this would have been a happy, romantic walk the morning after sex. We wouldn't be preparing for battle and worrying about our loved ones. We'd be laughing and teasing each other while secretly planning our next romantic getaway. We didn't live in a normal world, of course. But in this kiss, it was easy to imagine we did. He and I reluctantly broke apart and left the woods, heading back toward the Guardian's building. Dark times were ahead of us, but with his kiss still burning on my lips, I felt like I could do anything, even face down a pack of Strigoi.
Chapter 27. None of the others appeared to have noticed our absence. More guardians, as promised, had shown up, and now we had almost 50. It was a veritable army, and much as with the Strigoi, the numbers were unprecedented, aside from old European legends of great epic battles between our races. We had more guardians on campus, but some had to stay behind to protect the school. A lot of my classmates had been drafted for that duty, but about 10 or so, including me, were accompanying the others to the cave. An hour before departure, we met again to go over the plan. There was a large chamber near the far side of the cave, and it made the most sense for the Strigoi to be there so they could head out right away once night came. We were going to attack from both ends. 15 guardians would go in from each side, accompanied by 3 Moroi each. 10 guardians would remain at each entrance to hold back any escaping Strigoi. I was assigned to watch the entrance on the far side. Dimitri and my mother were part of the groups actually going inside. I wished desperately that I could have been with them, but I knew I was lucky to be along at all. And on a mission like this, every job was important. Our little army set out, moving at a brisk pace to cover the 5 miles. We figured that it would take a little over an hour, and there would still be enough daylight for the fight and return trip. No Strigoi would be stationed outside on guard duty, so we could reach the caves undetected. Once our people were inside, however, it was almost a given that the Strigoi's superior hearing would immediately alert them to the attack. There was little conversation as we approached. No one felt like chatting, and most talk was of a logistical nature. I walked with the novices, but every once in a while, I'd glance over and meet Dimitri's eyes. I felt like there was an invisible bond between us now, so thick and intense that it was a wonder everyone couldn't see it. His face was battle serious, but I saw the smile in his eyes. Our group split when we reached the closest entrance to the cave. Dimitri and my mother were going in here, and as I gave them one last glance, my feelings had little to do with my earlier romantic interlude. Everything I felt was worry, worry I'd never see them again. I had to remind myself that they were tough, 2 of the best guardians out there. If anyone would come out of this, it was them. I was the one who needed to be careful, and as we walked the half mile around the mountain's base, I carefully placed my emotions in a small compartment in the back of my mind. They'd have to stay there until this was over. I was in battle mode now, and couldn't let my feelings distract me. When we were almost to our entrance, I caught a silvery flash out of the corner of my eye. I'd been keeping the assorted ghostly images that lived outside of the wards away, but this was one I wanted to see. Glancing over, I saw Mason. He stood there, saying nothing, wearing his perpetually sad expression. He still seemed unusually pale to me. As our group passed by, he held up one hand. As a farewell or benediction, I didn't know. At the cave's entrance, our group split up. Alberta and Stan were leading the group in. They stood poised at the entrance, waiting for the exact time they'd agreed upon with the other group. Ms. Carmack, my magic teacher, was among the Moroi going in with them. She looked nervous but determined. The moment came and the adults disappeared. The rest of us stood there, lined up in a ring around the cave. Gray clouds hung in the sky. The sun had begun its descent, but we still had a while. "This is going to be easy," murmured Meredith, one of 3 other girls in the senior class. She spoke uncertainly, more to herself than to me, I think. "A slam dunk. They'll take out the Strigoi before any of them realize it. We won't have to do anything." I hoped she was right. I was ready to fight, but if I didn't have to, it'd mean everything had gone as planned. We waited. There was nothing else to do. Every minute felt like an eternity. Then we heard it. The sounds of fighting. Muffled cries and grunts, a few screams, all of us tensed, bodies so rigid we nearly snapped. Emil was our leader on this, and he stood closest to the entrance, stake in hand and sweat forming on his brow as he peered into the darkness, ready for any sign of a Strigoi. A few minutes into it, we heard the sound of footsteps running toward us. Our stakes were ready. Emil and another guardian drew closer to the entrance, ready to jump in and kill the fleeing Strigoi. but it wasn't Ostrogoy who came out. It was Abby Badika. She was scraped up and dirty, but otherwise, she was alive. Her face was frantic and streaked with tears. At first, she screamed when she saw all of us. Then she realized who we were and collapsed into the arms of the first person she could get to. Meredith. Meredith looked surprised, but she gave Abby a hug of reassurance. "It's okay," Meredith said. "Everything's okay. You're in the sun." Gently, Meredith unwrapped Abby and led her to a nearby tree. Abby sat at its base, burying her face in her hands. Meredith returned to her position. I wanted to comfort Abby. I think we all did, but it would have to wait. A minute later, another Maroi came out. It was Mr. Ellsworth, the teacher I'd had in fifth grade. He, too, looked worn, and his neck showed puncture marks. The Strigoi had used him for feeding but hadn't killed him yet. Nonetheless, despite what horrors he must have faced, Mr. Ellsworth was calm, his eyes alert and watchful. He recognized the situation and immediately stepped out of our circle.
"What's going on in there?"
asked Emil, his eyes on the cave. Some of the guardians had earpieces, but I imagined in the midst of battle it was hard to report back.
"It's a mess," said Mr. Ellsworth. "But we're getting away, in both directions. It's hard to tell who's fighting who, but the Strigoi are distracted, and someone," he frowned. "I saw someone using fire on the Strigoi."
None of us answered. It was too complex to get into right now. He seemed to realize that and withdrew to sit near a still sobbing Abby. Two more Maroi and a Dampier I didn't know soon joined Abby and Mr. Ellsworth. Each time someone came out, I prayed it would be Eddie. We had five victims so far, and I had to assume that others were escaping at the entrance closest to the school. Several minutes passed, though, and no one else came out. My shirt was drenched, soaked through with sweat. I had to shift my hold on the stake every once in a while. My grip was so tight that my fingers were locking up. Suddenly, I saw Emil flinch. I realized he was getting a message through his earpiece. His face showed intense concentration, and then he murmured something back. Looking up at us, he pointed at three novices.
"You, take them back to the school."
He gestured at the refugees and then turned toward three of the adult guardians.
"Go in. Most of the prisoners have gotten out, but our people are trapped. There's a stalemate."
The guardians moved in without hesitation, and a few moments later, the novices and their charges took off. That left four of us, two adults, Emil and Stephen, and two novices, me and Shane. The tension around us was so thick we could barely breathe. No one else was coming out. No more reports were being made. Emil glanced up and looked alarmed. I followed his gaze. More time had passed than I realized. The sun was significantly lower. Emil suddenly flinched again as another message came through. He looked at all of us, his face troubled.
"We need more in there to cover the escape on the other end. It doesn't sound like we've lost many. They're still just having trouble with the retreat."
"Many," he'd said. "Not any." That meant we'd lost at least one person. I felt cold all over.
"Stephen, you go in," said Emil.
He hesitated, and I could read his dilemma like a book. He wanted to go in, too, but as the leader for this side, he was supposed to stay stationed here until the last possible moment. He was on the verge of disobeying those orders, I realized. He was considering going in with Stephen and leaving Shane and me out here. Yet, at the same time, he couldn't bring himself to leave two novices here alone should something unexpected happen. Emil exhaled, and he looked us over.
"Rose, go with him."
I didn't waste a moment. Following Stephen, I slipped into the cave and immediately that nauseous feeling rolled over me. It had been cold outside, but it was colder still as we moved deeper. It was also darker. Our eyes could handle a fair amount of it, but it soon became too much. He flipped on a small light attached to his jacket.
"I wish I could tell you what to do, but I don't know what we'll find," he told me.
"Be ready for anything." The darkness in front of us began to fade. The sounds grew louder. We picked up the pace, glancing in all directions. Suddenly, we found ourselves in the large chamber shown on the map. A fire burned in one corner, one the Strigoi had made, not anything magical. That was providing the light. Looking around, I immediately saw what had happened. Part of the wall had fallen in, creating a pile of stones. No one had been crushed under it, but it had almost entirely blocked the opening to the other side of the cave. I didn't know if magic had caused it, or if the fighting had. Maybe it had been a coincidence. Whatever the reason, 7 guardians, including Dimitri and Alberta, were trapped now by 10 Strigoi. No Moroi fire users had been caught on this side, but the flashes of light coming through the opening in the cave-in showed me that they were still fighting on the other side. I saw bodies lying on the floor. 2 were Strigoi, but I couldn't make out the others. The problem was obvious. Getting through the opening would require someone practically crawling. It would put the person in a vulnerable position. This meant these Strigoi needed to be taken out before the Guardians could make their escape. Stephen and I were going to help even the odds. We came up from behind the Strigoi, but 3 of them sensed us somehow and turned toward us. 2 jumped at Stephen, and the other came at me. Instantly, I kicked into battle mode. All the rage and frustration poured out through me. The cave made for close fighting quarters, but I was still able to evade him. In fact, the close space was to my advantage because the Strigoi, with his larger size, had trouble ducking and dodging. I stayed out of his reach mostly, though he did grab hold of me long enough to slam me against the wall. I didn't even feel it. I just kept moving, going on the offensive. I eluded his next attack, got in some blows of my own, and with my small size, managed to slip down and stake him before his next hit. I pulled out the blade in one smooth motion and went to help Stephen. He had taken out one of his attackers, and between us, we finished the last one. That left 7 Strigoi now. No, 6. The trapped guardians who were having difficulty in their pinned position had killed another. Stephen and I jerked the Strigoi closest to us out of the circle. He was a strong one, very old, very powerful. And even with the 2 of us, he was hard to take down. At last we did. With the Strigoi numbers reduced, the other guardians were having an easier time getting to the rest. They started freeing themselves from their trapped position, and their numbers alone were now an aid. When the Strigoi count was down to 2, Alberta yelled at us to start escaping. Our alignment in the room had changed. We were now the ones surrounding the last 2 Strigoi. This left the path clear for 3 of the guardians to escape via the way I'd come in. Stephen, meanwhile, crawled through the hole to the other side. Dimitri staked 1 of the 2 Strigoi. 1 left. Stephen stuck his head back in and shouted something to Alberta that I couldn't quite make out. She yelled something back without looking at him. She, Dimitri, and 2 others were closing in on the last Strigoi. "Rose!" yelled Stephen, beckoning. "Follow orders." That's what we did. I left the fray, scrambling through the hole more easily than he had, thanks to my smaller size. Another guardian immediately followed after me. No one was on this side of the cave-in. The fight had either ended or moved on. Bodies showed that things had been intense, however. I saw more Strigoi, as well as a familiar face. Yori. I hastily looked away toward Stephen, who was helping another guardian through. Alberta came next. "They're dead," she called. "It sounds like there are a few more blocking the retreat down here. Let's finish this before the sun comes up." Dimitri came last of all through the gap. He and I exchanged brief, relieved glances, and then we were on the move. This was the long part of the tunnel, and we hurried down it, anxious to get our remaining people out. At first, we encountered nothing, and then flashes of light indicated a fight up ahead. Ms. Carmack and my mother were fighting 3 Strigoi. My group closed in, and in seconds, the Strigoi were down. "That's it for this group," my mother gasped out. I was grateful to see her alive, too. "But I think there are more here than we thought. I think they left some behind when they went to attack the school. The rest of our people, that survived, have already made it out." "There are other branches in the cave," said Alberta. "Strigoi could be hiding in there." My mother agreed. "They could be."
Some know they're overwhelmed and are just going to wait us out and escape later. Others may come for us.
What do we do? Asked Stephen.
Finish them off or retreat?
We turned to Alberta. She made a quick decision.
We retreat.
We got as many as we could, and the sun is dropping. We need to get behind the wards. We took off, so close to victory, fueled by the disappearing light. Dimitri was beside me as we moved.
Did Eddie get out?
I hadn't seen his body, but I hadn't been paying much attention either.
Yes, said Dimitri, breathing ragged. God only knew how many Strigoi he'd fought today. We had to practically force him out. He wanted to fight.
That sounded like Eddie. I remember this curve, my mother said as we rounded a corner. It's not much farther. We should see light soon. Thus far, we were only guided by the jacket lights. I felt the nausea only a split second before they attacked. At a T-intersection, 7 Strigoi jumped us. They'd let the earlier party escape, but they'd been lying in wait for us. 3 on one side and 4 on the other. One guardian, Alan, never saw it coming. A Strigoi grabbed him and snapped Alan's neck so quickly that it looked effortless. It probably was. It was such a mirror to what had happened to Mason that I nearly came to a standstill. Instead, I doubled back, ready to get into the fray. But we were in a narrow part of the tunnel, and not all of us could get through to the Strigoi. I was stuck in the back. Ms. Carmack was beside me, and she had enough visibility to light up a couple of the Strigoi, making it easier for those guardians in the fight to stake them. Alberta caught a glimpse of me and a couple other guardians. "Start retreating," she yelled. None of us wanted to leave, but there wasn't much we could do. I saw one guardian fall, and my heart lurched. I hadn't known him, but it didn't matter. In seconds, my mother was on the Strigoi attacker, driving her stake through his heart. Then I lost sight of the fight as I rounded another corner with the 3 guardians with me. Farther down the corridor, I saw faint purplish light. The exit. Faces of other guardians peered in at us. We'd made it. But where were the others? We ran to the exit, emerging into the air. My group clustered by the opening, anxious to see what had happened. The sun, I was dismayed to see, was nearly gone. The nausea hadn't left me, which meant Strigoi were still alive. Moments later, my mother's party came tearing down the hall. By the numbers, 1 more had gone down. But they were so close. Everyone around me tensed up. So close. So close. But not close enough. 3 Strigoi lay in wait in one of the alcoves. We'd passed them, but they'd let us go by. It all happened so fast. No one could have reacted in time. One of the Strigoi grabbed Celeste, his mouth and fangs going for her cheek. I heard a strangled scream and saw blood everywhere. One of the Strigoi went for Miss Carmack, but my mother jerked her away and shoved her forward toward us. The 3rd Strigoi grabbed Dimitri. In all the time I'd known him, I'd never seen Dimitri falter. He was always faster, always stronger than everyone else. Not this time. This Strigoi had caught him by surprise, and that slight edge was all it had taken. I stared. It was the blonde Strigoi, the one who had spoken to me in the battle. He grabbed Dimitri and pulled him to the ground. They grappled, strength against strength. And then I saw those fangs sink into Dimitri's neck. The red eyes flicked up and made contact with my own. I heard another scream. This time, it was my own. My mother started to double back toward the fallen, but then 5 more Strigoi appeared. It was chaos. I couldn't see Dimitri anymore. I couldn't see what had happened to him. Indecision flashed over my mother's features as she tried to decide to flee or fight. And then regret all over her face. She kept running toward us and the exit. Meanwhile, I was trying to run back inside, but someone was stopping me. It was Stan.
What are you doing, Rose? More are coming.
Didn't he understand? Dimitri was in there. I had to get Dimitri. My mother and Alberta burst out, dragging Miss Carmack. A group of Strigoi were after them, skidding to a halt just on the edge of the waning light. I was still fighting Stan. He didn't need the help, but my mother grasped a hold of me and tugged me away.
Rose, we have to get out of here. He's in there, I screamed, straining as hard as I could. How could I have killed Strigoi and not been able to break free from these two? Dimitri's in there. We have to go back for him. We can't leave him. I was rambling, hysterical, shouting at them all that we had to go rescue Dimitri. My mother shook me hard and leaned close so there were only a couple inches between us.
He's dead, Rose. We can't go back in there. The sun will be down in 15 minutes and they're waiting for us. We're going to be in the dark before we can get back to the wards. We need every second we can get. It still may not be enough.
I could see the Strigoi gathered at the entrance, their red eyes gleaming with anticipation. They completely filled the opening. 10, I believed. Maybe more. My mother was right. With their speed, even our 15-minute lead might not be enough. And yet, I still couldn't take a step. I couldn't stop staring at the cave back where Dimitri was, back where half of my soul was. He couldn't be dead. If he was, then surely I would be dead too. My mother slapped me, the pain snapping me out of my daze.
Run!
She yelled at me.
He is dead. You are not going to join him.
I saw the panic in her own face, panic over me, her daughter, getting killed. I remembered Dimitri saying he'd rather die than see me dead. And if I stood there stupidly, letting the Strigoi get me, I'd fail both of them.
Run!
She cried again. Tears streaming down my face. I ran. Chapter 28. The next 12 hours were the longest in my life. Our group made it back to campus safely, though most of it was done at a run, which was hard with so many injured. The entire time I felt nauseous, presumably because Strigoi were near. If they were, they never caught up to us, and it's possible I was simply sick from everything that had happened in the caves. Once back behind the wards, the other novices and I were forgotten. We were safe, and the adults now had a lot of other things to concern themselves with. All of the captives had been rescued, all the ones that were alive. As I'd feared, the Strigoi had decided to munch on one before we got there. That meant we had rescued 12. 6 guardians, including Dimitri, had been lost. Those weren't bad numbers, considering how many Strigoi we'd faced. But when you look at the difference, it really meant we'd only saved 6 lives. Had the loss of all those guardians' lives been worth it?
You can't look at it that way, Eddie told me as we walked toward the clinic.
Everyone, prisoners and raiders, had been ordered to get checked out.
You didn't just save those lives. You guys killed almost 30 Strigoi, plus the ones on campus. Think about all the people they would have killed. You essentially saved all those people's lives, too.
A rational part of me knew he was right. But what did rationality have to do with anything when Dimitri might be dead? It was petty and selfish, but in that moment, I wanted to trade all those lives for his. He wouldn't have wanted that, though. I knew him. And through the tiniest, smallest chance, it was possible he wasn't dead. Even though the bite had looked pretty serious, that Strigoi could have incapacitated him and then fled. He could be lying in the caves right now, dying and in need of medical care. It drove me crazy, thinking of him like that, and us unable to help. There was no way we could go back, however. Not until daytime. Another party would go then to bring back our dead so that we could bury them. Until then, I had to wait. Dr. Olensky gave me a quick check, decided I didn't have a concussion, and then sent me on my way to bandage my own scrapes. She had too many others to worry about right now, who were in far worse condition. I knew the smart thing was to go to my dorm or to Lyssa. I could have used the rest, and through the bond, I felt her calling to me. She was worried. She was afraid. I knew she'd find out the news soon, though. She didn't need me, and I didn't want to see her. I didn't want to see anyone. So rather than go to my dorm, I went to the chapel. I needed to do something until the caves could be checked out. Praying was as good an option as any. The chapel was usually empty in the middle of the day, but not this time. I shouldn't have been surprised,
Considering the death and tragedy of the last 24 hours, it was only natural that people would seek comfort. Some sat alone. Some sat in groups. They cried. They knelt. They prayed. Some simply stared off into space, clearly unable to believe what had happened. Father Andrew moved around the sanctuary, speaking to many of them. I found an empty pew in the very back corner and sat there. Drawing my knees up to me, I wrapped my arms around them and rested my head. On the walls, icons of saints and angels watched over all of us. Dmitri couldn't be dead. There was no way he could be. Surely, if he was, I would know. No one could take a life like that from the world. No one who had held me in bed like he had yesterday could really be gone. We had been too warm, too alive. Death couldn't follow something like that. Lissa's tchotchke was around my wrist, and I ran my fingers over the cross and the beads. I tried desperately to put my thoughts into the forms of prayers, but I didn't know how. If God was real, I figured he was powerful enough to know what I wanted without me actually saying the right words. Hours passed. People came and went. I got tired of sitting and eventually stretched myself across the length of the pew. From the gold-painted ceiling, more saints and angels stared down at me. So much divine help, I thought. But what good were they really doing? I didn't even realize I'd fallen asleep until Lissa woke me up. She looked like an angel herself, the pale hair hanging long and loose around her face. Her eyes were as gentle and compassionate as those of the saints. "Rose," she said, "we've been looking all over for you. Have you been here the entire time?" I sat up, feeling tired and bleary-eyed. Considering I hadn't slept the night before and I had gone on a massive raid, my fatigue was understandable. "Pretty much," I told her. She shook her head. "That was hours ago. You should go eat something." "I'm not hungry." "Hours ago." I clutched her arm. "What time is it? Has the sun come up?" "No. It's still about, 5 hours away." 5 hours. Could I wait that long? Lissa touched my face. I felt magic burn through our bond, and then the warm and cold tingling coursed through my own skin. Bruises and cuts disappeared. "You shouldn't do that," I said. A faint smile crossed her lips. "I've been doing it all day. I've been helping Dr. Olensky." "I heard about that, but wow, just feels so strange. We've always kept it hidden, you know?" "It doesn't matter if everyone knows now," she said with a shrug. "After everything that's happened, I had to help. So many people are hurt, and if it means my secret getting out, well, it had to happen sooner or later. Adrian's been helping too, though he can't do as much." And then it hit me. I straightened up. "Oh my God, Liss, you can save him. You can help Dmitri." Deep sorrow filled her face and the bond. "Rose," she said quietly, "they say Dimitri's dead." "No," I said. "He can't be. You don't understand. I think he was just injured, probably badly. But if you're there when they bring him back, you can heal him." Then the craziest thought of all came to me. "And if he did die?" The words hurt coming out. "You could bring him back. Just like with me. He'd be shadow-kissed, too." Her face grew even sadder. Sorrow, for me now, radiated out of her. "I can't do that. Bringing people back from the dead is a huge power drain. And besides, I don't think I could do it on someone who has been dead, that long. I think it has to be recent." I could hear the crazy desperation in my own voice. "But you have to try." "I can't." She swallowed. "You heard what I said to the Queen. I meant it. I can't go around bringing every dead person back to life. That gets into the kind of abuse Victor wanted. It's why we kept this secret."
"You'd let him die? You wouldn't do this? You wouldn't do this for me?"
I wasn't shouting, but my voice was definitely too loud for a church. Most everyone was gone now, and with the level of grief around here, I doubted anyone thought too much of an outburst.
I would do anything for you. You know that. And you won't do this for me?
I was on the verge of sobbing. Lissa studied me, a million thoughts swirling in her mind. She assessed my words, my face, my voice, and like that, she finally got it. She finally realized what I felt for Dimitri, that it was more than a teacher-student bond. I felt the knowledge light up in her mind. Countless connections suddenly came together for her. Comments I'd made, ways that Dimitri and I acted around each other. It all made sense to her now, things she'd been too blind to notice. Questions immediately sprang up too, but she didn't ask any of them or even mention what she'd realized. Instead, she just took my hand in hers and pulled me close.
I'm so sorry, Rose. I'm so, so sorry. I can't.
I let her drag me away after that, presumably to get food. But when I sat at the cafeteria table and stared at the tray in front of me, the thought of eating anything made me sicker than being around the Strigoi had. She gave up after that, realizing nothing was going to happen until I knew what had happened to Dimitri. We went up to her room, and I lay down on the bed. She sat near me, but I didn't want to talk, and I soon fell asleep again. The next time I woke up, it was my mother beside me.
Rose, we're going to check the caves. You can't go into them, but you can come to the school's borders with us if you want.
It was the best I could get. If it meant I could find out what had happened to Dimitri a moment sooner than if I stayed here, I'd do it. Lissa came with me, and we trailed behind the assembled guardian party. I was still hurt by her refusal to heal Dimitri, but a part of me secretly thought she wouldn't be able to hold back once she saw him. The guardians had assembled a large group to check the caves, just in case. We were pretty sure the Strigoi were gone, however. They'd lost their advantage, and had to know that if we came back for the dead, it would be with renewed numbers. Any of them that had survived would be gone. The guardians crossed over the wards, and the rest of us who had followed along waited by the border. Hardly anyone spoke. It would probably be 3 hours before they came back, counting travel time. Trying to ignore the dark, leaden feeling inside of me, I sat on the ground and rested my head against Lissa's shoulder, wishing the minutes would fly by. A Maroi fire user created a bonfire, and we all warmed ourselves by it. The minutes didn't fly, but they did eventually pass. Someone shouted that the guardians were coming back. I leapt up and ran to look. What I saw drove me to a halt. Stretchers. Stretchers carrying the bodies of those who had been killed. Dead guardians, their faces pale and eyes unseeing. One of the watching Maroi went and threw up in a bush. Lissa started crying. One by one, the dead filed past us. I stared, feeling cold and empty, wondering if I'd seen their ghosts the next time I went outside the wards. Finally, the whole group had gone by. 5 bodies, but it had felt like 500. And there was one body I hadn't seen, one I'd been dreading. I ran up to my mother. She was helping carry a stretcher. She wouldn't look at me, and undoubtedly knew what I'd come to ask. "Where's Dimitri?" I demanded. "Is he..." It was too much to hope for, too much to ask. "Is he alive?" Oh, God, what if my prayers had been answered? What if he was back there, injured, waiting for them to send a doctor? My mother didn't answer right away. I barely recognized her voice when she did. He wasn't there, Rose. I stumbled over the uneven ground and had to hurry up to catch her again. Wait, what's that mean? Maybe he's injured and left to get help. She still wouldn't look at me. Molly wasn't there either. Molly was the Maroi who had been snacked on. She was my age, tall and beautiful. I'd seen her body in the cave, drained of blood. She had definitely been dead. There was no way she'd been injured and staggered out. Molly and Dimitri, both their bodies gone.
"No!" I gasped out. "You don't think..."
A tear leaked out of my mother's eye.
I'd never seen anything like that from her.
I don't know what to think, Rose. If he survived, it's possible. It's possible they took him for later.
The thought of Dimitri as a snack was too horrible for words, but it wasn't as horrible as the alternative. We both knew it.
But they wouldn't have taken Molly for later. She'd been dead a while.
My mother nodded. I'm sorry, Rose. We can't know for sure.
It's likely they're both just dead, and the Strigoi dragged their bodies off.
She was lying. It was the first time in my entire life that my mother had ever told me a lie to protect me. She wasn't the comforting kind, wasn't the kind who would make up pretty stories in order to make someone feel better. She always told the harsh truth. Not this time. I stopped walking, and the group continued filing past me. Lissa caught up, worried and confused.
"What's happening?" she asked.
I didn't answer. Instead, I turned and ran backwards, back toward the wards. She ran after me, calling my name. No one else noticed us because, honestly, who in the world was stupid enough to cross the wards after everything that had happened? I was, although in daylight I had nothing to fear. I ran past the place Jessie's group had attacked her, stepping across the invisible lines that marked the boundaries of the academy's grounds. Lissa hesitated a moment and then joined me. She was breathless from running after me.
"Rose, what are you—"
"Mason!" I cried.
"Mason, I need you!"
It took him a little while to materialize. This time, he not only seemed ultra-pale, he also appeared to be flickering, like a light about to go out. He stood there, watching me, and although his expression was the same as always, I had the weirdest feeling that he knew what I was going to ask. Lissa, beside me, kept glancing back and forth between me and the spot I was speaking to.
"Mason, is Dimitri dead?"
Mason shook his head.
"Is he alive?"
Mason shook his head. Neither alive nor dead. The world swam around me, sparkles of color dancing before my eyes. The lack of food had made me dizzy, and I was on the verge of fainting. I had to stay in control here. I had to ask the next question. Out of all the victims they could have chosen, surely they wouldn't have picked him. The next words stuck in my throat, and I sank to my knees as I spoke them.
Is Dimitri a Strigoi?
Mason hesitated only a moment, like he was afraid to answer me, and then he nodded. My heart shattered. My world shattered. "You will lose what you value most." It hadn't been me that Rhonda was talking about. It hadn't even been Dimitri's life. What you value most. It had been his soul. Chapter 29. Nearly a week later, I showed up at Adrian's door. We hadn't had classes since the attack, but our normal curfew hours were still in effect. It was almost bedtime. Adrian's face registered complete and total shock when he saw me. It was the first time I'd ever sought him out, rather than vice versa.
"Little Dampier," he said, stepping aside. "Come in."
I did, and was nearly overwhelmed by the smell of alcohol as I passed him. The Academy's guest housing was nice, but he clearly hadn't done much to keep his suite clean. I had a feeling he'd probably been drinking nonstop since the attack. The TV was on, and a small table by the couch held a half-empty bottle of vodka. I picked it up and read the label. It was in Russian. "Bad time?" I asked, setting it back down.
"Never a bad time for you,"
he told me, gallantly. His face looked haggard. He was still as good-looking as ever, but there were dark circles under his eyes, like he hadn't been sleeping well. He waved me toward an armchair and sat down on the couch.
"Haven't seen much of you."
I leaned back. "I haven't wanted to be seen," I admitted.
I'd hardly spoken to anyone since the attack. I'd spent a lot of time by myself, or with Lyssa. I took comfort from being around